We even see that sometimes when we're driving in a car. We see it looks like there's water in the road, but it's just the heat waves making it look like water. So sometimes it can look very real, can even fool you into thinking, oh, look, there is actually, you might slam on your brakes so you don't run into the water because it looks so real. So a Christian can create illusions like that. So even the demigods become bewildered, it says there, by Krishna's. Of course, this is right from the beginning of the Bhagavatam. We're being taught that Krishna is the supreme. Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. All these other devas and other personalities, powerful personalities, were shown right from the beginning of the Bhagavatam that Krishna is in a special category. He can even bewilder the demigods. And in his Leela, of course, he does that. He bewildered Lord Brahma, Brahma Vimohan Leela. And he bewildered Lord Indra. Both of them, they're great demigods. They're supposed to know everything. But they're seeing Krishna as a little boy, and they just, it doesn't compute. Vishnu is one thing, yes, he's powerful, he rules over these great planets, and so much majesty and opulence. But this little boy, why are they worshiping this little boy like he's God? So Brahma was bewildered, and Indra, of course, he, same thing, he tested, wanted to test Krishna. So even the demigods can become bewildered themselves, seeing the power and opulence of Krishna, his magic. There are several places there are verses where Krishna is called Natta. Natta means a dancer or an actor. Natacharyam, like a dancer on a stage or an actor on a stage. He's not recognized. Prabhupada says sometimes the actor is so well covered by his costume and makeup that you can't tell who it is. Even our own little plays, sometimes someone appears and we say, who's that? Who's that actor behind that beard and mustache or whatever? We're not quite sure who it is. So Krishna appears like an ordinary child. And we can't tell, who is this? How can he do these things? The gopas here. How can this little boy, he's just a little boy. They're seeing him just as a little boy. How can this little boy do these things? Or did he do this? Now they're just bewildered. They're not sure what's going on. Did he do something? Did somebody else do something? Did some demon come here? Maybe this is... We heard that Gargamuni told us that he was going to be as powerful as Narayan. He was going to be like Narayana. Of course, this idea, like Narayana, or like Vishnu, comes up in another place. Where who is it that's praying? For they want a son like Krishna? Is it Kashyap and Aditi? Or is it Kashyap and Aditi? Yeah, they saw Narayan and they have an idea. We want a son like Narayan. So Narayan is thinking, well, if you want a son like me, you'll have to get me. Because there's nobody like me. So here they're thinking that when Gargamuni said he's like Narayan, well, he was basically saying it is Narayan. Because there's nobody else like Narayan. So this is Krishna's position. He's actually God, but is he or is he not? Even there, though they're told, the residents of Vrindavan, even there are times when they think, oh, actually, Krishna is God. I think he really is God. But then they forget later. They'll say, well, maybe not. So Krishna just puts the curtain again, covers their eyes again. So it's completely under his control. So the demigod worshippers, they can't see beyond that curtain. That's what's being brought up. I was speaking here in the context of this Bhagavad Gita verse. Krishna says, I'm never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. Because I'm covered by my yoga maya. So the demigods are mentioned just before this. So they're in that category. Then just after that, there's this verse. Let's see. Avyaktam vyaktam apannam manyate mama buddhaya Parambhavam Jananto Mamavyayam Anuttamam. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So here Krishna goes from the demigod worshippers to the impersonalists. So the impersonalists, they're also bewildered. They're, even though they may be jnanis, jnanis are sometimes impersonalists, and their jnana is that they understand that fruitive activity is not the way to go, not the means of success. It's not the goal of life. We have to transcend this world to attain happiness. But they sometimes have mixed up ideas about what that higher truth is above karma and in relationship to the absolute truth. They take it in an impersonal way, and here specifically in relation to Krishna, they have some idea that Krishna was just born in the mode of goodness and he's not, that his form is temporary. We can worship him, this form of Krishna. This is very common, actually. In fact, this is even called bhakti by people who purport to be bhakti, bhaktas. They say, we'll worship this form of Krishna, which is temporary, but we can get some advantage from this. We'll worship, but we know that ultimately it's not the absolute truth, because obviously this form is temporary. All forms are temporary. There's only one. There's only one thing, one formless thing. So any form is temporary. That's the way they think. So they think, well, Krishna is just somehow some impersonal entity has assumed this personal form. So this is also ajananto. They don't know. Parambhavam ajananto. They don't know Krishna's supreme position. So the verse about, quote, the curtain of yoga maya that covers everyone comes after these, you know, talking about the demigods, then talking about the impersonalists. And it says, Naham Prakashya Sarvasya. I am not Prakash, means manifest, to Sarvasya, everyone. So Prabhupada, in the beginning of the purport, he says, well, why, when Krishna came, especially when he was present, wasn't he manifest to everyone because everyone could see him? So Prabhupada makes a distinction in the purport between these two words. They were seeing him, but he was not manifest to him, to them. Manifest in the sense of actually where they could understand who he was. His supreme personality was not evident to them. They were seeing him, but they really weren't seeing him. And Prabhupada says, actually only a few, some of the Pandavas and others, a few were able to see him, or the Kurus and Yadus later. They were able to see him and appreciate him. Of course, even the Yadus, there's a verse where it says that the Yadus, they were just like when they were like in a school of fish. There's another fish there, so maybe that fish is glowing a little bit, so he looks a little different, but they think he's a fish like them too. So Krishna was swimming with the other fish. He was living amongst us, living among the Yadus. So the Yadus thought, well, he's maybe Yadu Shrestha, the best of the Yadus, but he's still a Yadu. Even they were bewildered by Krishna's position. Because of the familiarity also, Prabhupada would quote, familiarity breeds contempt. So he's hanging out with us. He's just like one of our friends. He's in a high position, but he's like one of us. So why weren't they able to see Krishna? Of course, he did extraordinary things. Weren't they able to see that he was living in 16,000 palaces at the same time? So this may not have been manifested to them, but it was manifest to Narada Muni. He was able to see it. So not everyone is able to see Krishna. His form is there. Another verse that Prabhupada quotes in the purport is from the Sri Isha Upanishad. Hiranmayena Patrena. The devotee prays, please remove your covering, your bright light. Hiranmayena Patrena. Your that you're, I'm trying to look at you, but all I'm seeing is this bright light. I can't see through the light. So this is the position of the impersonalist. They can't see through the light. They're blinded by the light. They can't see Krishna, who's actually there. That requires even better vision. It takes some kind of vision to see that light, to get that realization. See the light in the sense of understanding that everything is Brahman, Sarvam Kaluvidam Brahma. Everything is spirit. Behind this dull matter, to understand this world is called Jada Vidya. Jada means dull, lifeless, like stone, material. So to have that village, that vision, Jada Vidya, then you can only see gross things. You can't see. You can see earth, water, fire. You can't see beyond that. So if you can see beyond that, you can see spirit, then that's a great step up to rise to the transcendental platform. But from there, then you have to see. If you only see light, you're blinded. All you see is the light. You have to go beyond that. Even the yogis sometimes see Krishna, but they're so astounded by Krishna's, the darshan of Krishna, that they can't do anything. They just become stunned. Shanta rasa. They become so overwhelmed by the magnificence of Krishna, they can't even do anything. So Krishna has to give more mercy. When Krishna gives more mercy, then the attitude of service, seva, awakens within the devotees. So you can say Krishna removes some of the covering. They can see a little more of his personality. Really, the advancement in Krishna consciousness means knowing about Krishna more and more intimately. Till the gopis, no one knows Krishna more intimately than the gopis do. And then even then, Krishna sometimes bewilders. He does wonderful things, ashcharyam. Ashcharya, this word comes up often. Krishna is wonderful. Wonderful Krishna, there's that chapter. Ashcharya causes wonder. You look and you just can't figure out what's going on. Even Krishna's face, it says that the residents of Dwarka, when Krishna would come out in the morning, they would look at his face. And it's like it was like seeing a festival, just looking at his face. It was a whole festival going on. Nityotsava. And they would never tire of looking at Krishna's beautiful face. So that's a kind of bewilderment too, when you just look at something. Like we had the expression, the deer in the headlights. So you have that, you're shocked by the darshan, what you can see. So Krishna sometimes does that. People can't think. They can't think what's going on because Krishna has that power. He can just overwhelm our vision, overwhelm our senses. Now, of course, what is the context of all of this? It's all about Krishna bringing us closer to Him. For the impersonalists, he hides. That's a kind of way of enticing too. When you hide, or even for the devotees, of course, Krishna hides. He gives a little hint, like he appeared before Narada. Then he said, sorry, but I have to leave now. I'm just giving you a taste. Or Parikshit Maharaj, he saw Krishna within the womb, got a little taste. Then he was searching the rest of his life. And for us also, we get tastes of Krishna. We get glimpses of what it might really be like to have pure love for Krishna. But Krishna can give and he can take away. He can reveal Prakash and he can cover as he likes. But it's always about his relationship with his devotees. So that's what's going on here. He's churning the rasas between himself and his gopas, the cowherd, the residents of Vrindavan. And of course, what happens whenever Krishna does these things, then they talk about them. The tradition was to take things that you want to remember and put them into songs. Of course, this was done for kings. And there were the bards, the Sukadas and Madhavas. We hear about these different singers, chanters, reciters. So what would they do? They would compose histories in meter and song, and then they would recite those. They would sing them. So they would remember them, or the king would be remembered. His fame would be carried on. So for Krishna, the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis, they would compose songs of Krishna's pastimes, and then they would sing them as they were doing their household duties. So one of the strengths of Krishna's, or the consequences of Krishna's pastimes, is that they're remembered and chanted, and therefore become purified. Kunti Devi points this out as one of the reasons why Krishna descends to this world. She says, some people came, think you came for this reason. Some people came, think you came for that reason. So one reason you came was to rejuvenate Shravanam Kirtanam. So how does that done? By his own pastimes, giving material for Shravanam Kirtanam. So in this way, sometimes Krishna uncovers and reveals himself, and other times he covers. And the acharyas on this, in quoting and commenting on this verse about the curtain of Maya, covering with the curtain of Maya, they point out that you might think that, well, if there's a curtain, that means you can't see from either side. So you can't see Krishna, and Krishna can't see you either. But then they say, well, of course, that's not true for Krishna. It's his curtain, Mama Maya. He can control it. He can see through it. It doesn't block him out. So he can also see. So this is another way of pointing out that Krishna is in a superior transcendental position, and how that Maya works is completely under his control, and he's never controlled by it. Whereas everybody else is controlled by it, whether in the conditioned state or even in the liberated state. So I'll read the last verse again. Krishna was bound by the rope to the ulukkala, the mortar, which he was dragging. But how could he have pulled down the trees? Who had actually done it? Where was the source for this incident? Considering all these astounding things, the cowherd men were doubtful and bewildered. So any questions or comments? Trivikram?
What's important to note is that by him covering the residents of Vrindavan with the Yogamaya potency, he's able to relish the pastimes with them, transcendental pastimes. Because if they realize, well, he's the supreme, then the relationship becomes different, completely different. But because they cover thinking him just like ordinary, then he relishes, you know, he enjoys the pastimes.
Yeah, that's the main reason Krishna does it. If they saw that he was God, then they couldn't relate to him in the same way, and that's what he wants. He wants that familiarity. Prangavindaprabhu?
That word ulukkala?
Yes.
You just read?
Ulukkala.
Ulukkala. Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, kal means bad. You know, the Sanskrit kal means bad. Many places Prabhupada also put. So ulukkala means what which uproots. So the ulukkala, the mortar, which uprooted all the unorthoformed body of the two boys, that's why the mortar is called ulukkala. Mm-hmm. The original Barbhulu. It's a nice class, Prabhu. Prabhupada gave you one example that how Krishna builders by his glance. Even in the battlefield, when Arjuna one time felt like the horses needed to drink, they were like running and running and running and jumping. It's like so hard work. Then all of a sudden he saw some symptoms that he got down. Even though the fighting was full speed, everybody shooting at him, but he somehow or other affectionate to his horses, and then he got down and started allow them to drink the water. So the question came by Bishwana Chakravarti Thakur, how is possible that in the middle of battlefield somebody would do this? Nobody ever would do this. But because he has a Krishna in the front, sitting in the chariot, Krishna just went one time, look at all of them, and Duryodhan, Karna, they are like bewildered. What's going on there? They could not even see what Arjuna is doing. So it's like overwhelming. And then after everything over, then they realize they missed the chance. So then Prabhupada gave a logic in Nectar of Devotion. In the battlefield, everybody would go with a fighting spirit, and Krishna did change his dresses from the suit form to the Kshatriya dress that he asked the laundryman of Kamsa to get the dresses. He changed it. So everything is there. But in the battlefield, why did he dress so beautiful? Prabhupada put that logic in his own translation. He said, why Krishna dress up like a newly wedding groom? So beautiful dress. He said, because he's so merciful that as soon his devotee named Sudarshan Chakra dissolved the physical and subtle body of each soldier, the first canto, 9th chapter, it says one of the verse 37, I believe, that it says they all got liberated. So Prabhupada gave in the third canto, 2nd chapter, where there are three types of liberation they got. So Prabhupada put that Krishna displayed his beauty so much, those who appreciated little bit, they immediately went to Vaikuntha. Those who glorified and fall in love, they went to Golok. And though did not appreciate, still got merciful nature, they got liberation like Shishupal.
Mm-hmm.
So Krishna's mercy is like overwhelming. I was like contemplating, I could not believe Krishna is so merciful.
Nothing else? All right.